Does this feel like the year? Can this be the year? It's become more and more apparent to me every day that this is the year that we scared and ordinary people get ourselves organized and push back against the increasingly oppressive, dominant culture's way of thinking. Against the understanding of ourselves as so very individualistic that each of us is an island unto ourselves and that we don't need each other to survive with our bodies and spirits intact. Against the idea that any human is so different from ourselves that they don't believe to be whole and healthy and safe. Against the culture that it's us or them, that in order to provide the conditions for true equity, we must lose something of ourselves, or some freedom, or some advantage we hold in getting ahead. Against the ridiculous idea that building walls and dropping bombs will make us safe. Against the fear that there isn't enough food or water or land for everyone, and the notion that we have to keep people out of this land and kick people out who have been in this land to ensure that there is enough for those of us who think we deserve to be here. We've been spending much needed time and energy tending to our wounds as we adjust to the reality of a rebirth of nationalism, of us or them thinking, of overt intolerance and racism. This burden we bear is heavy, this disappointment that we hold in our neighbors, this fear that we and people we know and love face dangers we thought we had overcome. We've been holding each other and those loved ones, holding on to compassion, gathering our strength, hoping and praying that we are enough to keep the vision of the beloved community alive in the face of the deepening and widening crevices of open hatred and divisiveness. The urge to gather with like-minded people has been strong. And we have responded to that urge by continuing to build this amazing place of love and acceptance together. This congregation, with its vision of radical welcome and deep trust, is growing and thriving because we refuse to believe the rhetoric that our survival requires that we think first of ourselves, because we know we are better together, stronger together, and that our differences enrich us rather than diminish us. We've also been pushing back against that hatred and divisiveness. How many of us went to the Women's March? How many of us have written or called their legislators to offer our support for their work toward equity? How many of us have attended a meeting of folks organizing to resist the intentional tearing apart of our community? Yeah. So here's the good news. We are already part of an organization that's committed to making our communities, our nation, a place where everyone has access to what they need to be whole and safe and healthy. We are part of an organization that believes that these things are human rights, that all humans, that all beings are born into love and worthy of love, that we have a right to live into our full potential, and that we have a responsibility to ensure that right for everyone. That responsibility comes out of our understanding that we're all connected, part of a whole that enfolds everyone and everything in a network of mutuality. My colleague Victoria Safford, who serves the White Bear Unitarian Church in Mahatmadi, Minnesota, wrote, "We do this for each other and are able to do it because of each other. It's both the why and the how. This may be the clearest lesson that our faith has to offer, our utter interdependence, this saving, grace-filled interdependence that binds us each to each and each to all. Each of us, the great wide us, is bound to all the others. The things we've done toward building the world we dream about are thoughtfully conceived and compassionate and deeply worthy. All of these things that we're raising our hands and all of these other things that we're doing. And there are more things we can do. We can sign the Declaration of Conscience, for example, that was recently created by our Unitarian Universalist Association, which reads, "At this extraordinary time in our nation's history, we are called to affirm our profound commitment to the fundamental principles of justice, equity, and compassion, to truth and core values of American society. In the face of looming threats to immigrants, Muslims, people of color, and the LGBTQ community, and the rise of hate speech, harassment, and hate crimes, we affirm our belief in the inherent worth and dignity of every person. In opposition to any steps to undermine the right of every citizen to vote or to turn back advances in access to health care and reproductive rights, we affirm our commitment to justice and compassion in human relations. And against actions to weaken or eliminate initiatives to address the threat of climate change, actions that would threaten not only our country but the entire planet, we affirm our unyielding commitment to protect the interdependent web of all existence. We will oppose any and all unjust government actions to deport, register, discriminate, or despoil. As people of conscience, we declare our commitment to translate our values into action as we stand on the side of love with the most vulnerable among us. We welcome and invite all to join in this commitment for justice. The time is now." You can find the link to sign this in this month's newsletter. And while you're reading that newsletter, you'll also find a note from our board president, Charlie McNulty, telling you that I signed this declaration in our congregation's name. Because now is the time to do these things in a more organized way. Because not only are we stronger together, we hold more power together. We know each other. We have practiced and continue to practice the path of openness and vulnerability and working into right relationship with each other. We have built trust in each other and in this, our faith community. And so now is the time to put that trust to work. In a few moments, you're going to hear reflections from two Rebers who have found themselves deep in the work of supporting immigrant communities in Madison, Beth Esser and Pete Haney. Our Board of Trustees has formed a task force charged with exploring the possibility of joining a network of congregations being formed in Madison who offer sanctuary to people at risk of deportation. There'll be many ways to participate in this network, from providing a physical place for a person or a family to live in literal sanctuary from immigration enforcement, to providing support in the form of food or transportation or companionship or witness to a person or a family living in sanctuary in another congregation's building. The task force has started compiling a list of what's needed, and they would love to share this list with you and start the conversation about how our congregation might be involved in this network. So please stay or come back into the sanctuary after a short stretch after the service. They've also planned several informational sessions for us about why people might need sanctuary to begin with, about what congregations can do to help, and what the legal implications of involvement might be. Very important questions for us to talk about. So these sessions will be on April 30th and May 14th, also right after worship, and they will include lunch. This is a time of deep reflection for us, a time for us to think about how we might stand in solidarity with our immigrant and refugee neighbors. We're being called as individuals, as a congregation, and as an association of congregations to join with other people of faith and other people in our community to protect the vulnerable among us. I am excited about what that might look like. I'm excited about how it might move us into deeper relationship with each other and our neighbors, and I'm excited about what transformations might result. I invite us to respond to that call as a strong body to come and go with me to that land of justice and freedom and singing. I'd like to start with Pete.
All right, well, thank you, Karen, and it's a real pleasure to see all of you here today on this lovely day when we could all be outside. So Karen asked me and some others to talk to you about the new sanctuary movement and why we as a congregation might want to be a part of it. And I'd like to start out with the words of a man that I met in Guatemala City in 1991, when I traveled there with a delegation of refugee rights workers from Texas. We all went there because we had read about the reasons why people were fleeing Guatemala and coming to Texas and other parts of the United States, but we wanted to see what was happening on the ground and talk to people who were involved in events on the ground. And our travels took us to a slum on the outskirts of Guatemala City where this man lived, and his neighbors, who lived in shacks made from scraps of wood and corrugated tin, paid more for water trucked into the neighborhood than people, residents of rich neighborhoods, paid for water from indoor plumbing. He and his neighbors were organizing to try to get water service and had faced death threats from a number of sources, well-connected mobsters who sold water to the neighborhood, people with high-level military and government connections were responsible. At one point, he had had to flee to the United States, and he sought refuge with a congregation here in the U.S. And then after some time, when he learned that things had calmed down a bit, that it was maybe safer for him to return, he went back to Guatemala to continue the struggle. And when I talked to him, he was actually in negotiations with the Army Corps of Engineers, who had an international body. Even though he knew that the United States had been behind the military, he said, at this point, I'll make a deal with the devil to get water. And he said some things to me that really stuck with me. He said, some people say they're looking for a just society. Others say they're looking for the kingdom of God. To me, it's the same thing. And addressing us, those of us who were there working with refugees in Texas, he said, you are the leaven of your society. It's up to you to change the United States. And here in Guatemala, we will lose more lives than you will. But your job is harder than ours. Well, that stuck with me, and I tried to take it to heart. But in the 26 years since then, we haven't changed the United States. Or at least not quite the way we had hoped we would. And that means we, the liberal church, we, people who are working for social justice in all kinds of ways, and we have to face that. We did do some things. And one thing that we did do was to help some people who were fleeing the violence of Central America get a foothold in the United States. Back then, sanctuary work was about welcoming the stranger at our door, and that work continues. In fact, I've been a little bit terrified lately when I've gone to meetings that and heard news about people coming into Texas, much as they did in the 80s and early 90s, and I've felt this very disturbing sense of deja vu. But today, the real focus of the new sanctuary movement that arose during the deportations that started during the Obama years was about solidarity with, it was not about welcoming the stranger, it's about solidarity with neighbors, people we should know better, people who shouldn't be strangers. And it's about not being strangers. It's about supporting the work of a generation of mostly Latino and mostly foreign-born activists who took their issues away from the lawyers and the experts during the Bush years, and who took the struggle to the streets and to the halls of Congress and managed to stop some really awful legislation from passing, and who made the, you know, were really the force that led President Obama to establish deferred action for childhood arrivals. They stepped into a void that some of us experts created by talking to judges and legislators and not talking to the public. And they were so powerful and so brave that they put the fear of God in those who derive benefit from dividing us against our neighbors, and that's why the politics of immigration are so contentious right now. If we let them down, and if we let ourselves lose them, we let our citizenship become the golden cage that Los Tigres del Norte sing about. Several of us from the Sanctuary Task Force will be available after this service to talk about these issues and steps that we as a congregation could take. I'd also like to let you know Karen has let you know about informational sessions. I'd also like to remind you that Voces de la Frontera, an advocacy organization based in Milwaukee, is going to be marching from Milwaukee to Madison over the course of 3 days, and they will get here May 1st, which will be a day without immigrants, and part of their focus will be with anti-immigrant proposals that are in front of the legislature, which is why they're coming to Madison instead of asking us to go to Milwaukee. So you'll be hearing more about this, and I hope to talk to some of you afterwards, and thank you so much for your time.
Good morning. Thank you, Pete, and thank you, Reverend Karen, for asking me to come up here. This is one of the things that makes me very nervous, but why am I called to be involved in the new sanctuary movement? So my calling is more recent than Pete's. The inherent worth and dignity of every person, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. You recognize these words as part of our Unitarian Universalist principles. There are a multitude of issues in our world that our faith calls us to confront so we can create a more just world. Environmental justice has been my focus for the past few years. But then November 8th happened. All I could think of the morning of November 9th was how the families in Miles' school were feeling. And how Miles and Isla would react to the election news. As many of you know, Miles attends a dual language school. Spanish and English are taught in his school. One of the greatest things about this school is the diversity of the students and staff. Miles's current teacher, who he loves and respects so much, he just has this wonderful smile come across his face when he talks about Maestra Luz, is from Mexico, and she grew up in Texas as a migrant farm worker. I marvel at the influence his teachers will have on his life. We're all thankful for the new friendships we're forming with families, some of whom are recent immigrants. Immigration debates are not new in this country, and indeed Obama's presidency saw many, many deportations. But the difference for me now was that immigrants were no longer a number. They were my son's teachers, his friends, and indeed my friends. The election had penetrated Miles's school in a profound way with many worries and fears. And the tears of my son and of the families and staff in Miles's school on November 9th were very real, and they tore open my heart. I realized that day I needed to make space in my life to be involved, to figure out how to be an ally to the immigrant community and involved in the new sanctuary movement. But the reality is, my faith has always called me to this work. But it was the personal connections that pushed me to be more active. And this is where I struggle, because what else does my faith call me to do that I'm not doing because I don't have the personal connection? A forum in Madison after the election, put on by a newly formed group called United Against Hate, drew thousands of people. Many speakers talked about how the diversity of our nation was a strength, and that the fear and division politicians and media create do not last when we actually get to know our neighbors and we recognize our common humanity. But what happens when our neighbors look just like us? How do we unite and get to know people different from us when our society is very segregated? Thank goodness for all of you. I am continually thankful for this faith community, where I can ask these questions, find some answers, and am challenged and supported as we journey together to figure out what our faith is calling each of us to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Beth. Thank you, Pete. I will bet that many of us have a story to tell. And I was going to make some time for us to do that now. You can turn around. I think we're not going to do that. I think we're going to save that for another day. I hope you will come and talk with Pete and with Jean Lydon, who are part of the Sanctuary Task Force, and tell some of those stories. I'll be here for a while as well as gather some information together. Thank you.